redneck girl likes.
And Bob, can you fill us in on this little jingle that you chose this week?
The Bellamy Boys, the Bellamy Brothers, Howard and David.
Okay.
Good song. Catchy song. What do you think, Tyler?
I don't know if it's good or catchy. It's hardly bearable. But they're getting ready for Friday afternoon with the redneck girl. And it's Friday afternoon?
They are.
So what's what brought you to this decision?
I heard it on the radio about a week ago. And also, we saw the Bellamy Boys on Saturday night in Fort Worth, Texas in January 1983.
Is that
the night
right?
Before the Cowboys defeated the Packers in that divisional playoff game?
So that was their lone playoff appearance in how many years?
Wow. Well, they hadn't been there in 10 years since John Brockington in 72 when they got beat by the five-man line of the Redskins. So this was at Billy Bob's, Texas, over in Fort Worth. A bar, I don't know, the biggest bar in the world.
Is that right?
And over in the corner, the Bellamy Boys put on a live act, yeah.
So you are you're a pretty big country fan.
Not really.
Then we have a lot of country choices on here. Didn't we have something about a tequila girl? And
we had John Anderson. Yep. Sweet had, Tequila Night.
What else did we have on here? Something.
TG we had.
TG Shepherd.
But now we've gone over to the Motown many times.
We have gone.
From straight rock, you know. I go the full gamut. The
you
full
do.
Spectrum.
You've got some broad musical taste here. We'll say that.
I could not stand country until right around my 30th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah.
A late bloomer to country.
Completely.
Was it the lyrics, the
hated
soul
it.
Of the music? What got you into it?
I don't know. I don't really know.
You didn't have like some religious awakening?
No. No.
Alan Jackson didn't speak to your heart? Did you see Trampled by Turtles? It's coming to Green Bay.
That's your boys.
That's right. They're coming back to the Meyer Theater. Should be a good show.
You'll be at that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And where were we last night? We were at the Rec Center taking in a little Horizon League basketball.
Between the UWM Panthers and the UW Green Bay Phoenix. Todd Rosiak, our colleague, came up and covered it, and we had dinner with Todd beforehand.
Everybody should read him. JS Online, exceptional Brewers coverage with Tom Hondercourt.
Yep.
The two best in the biz. Love Todd. Had a good time down there in Phoenix at spring training last year, but yeah, you know what? It looked like the Phoenix were running away from them. They had a 30-plus point lead, and Matt Tybee is diving for loose balls, and the Panthers claw their way back into it. It turned out to be a pretty good game. You got to give the Panthers credit. They've had a terrible season, but I don't know how they all of a sudden woke up in that one to make it a game. What did you think?
They closed to 11. 81-70 was the finale. At least the first half was...
It was
hard to pay attention to. It was just a total rout, you know?
I mean, they didn't even... That one possession, they didn't even know the shot clock went off. It was just out of it, but I don't know. I mean, can Green Bay do any damage in the? I mean, if they win the Horizon League, which is no given, what did you make of them?
I mean, they should have won it last year. They had home court, number one seed, and they basically choked that away with a little bit of injury problems. But there's still no excuses. You got to win that game.
Yeah,
and then they lost it right. UWM then won at Wright State. UWM is ineligible for the league tournament.
They are. Boy, they win the league and then they have that buzzkill, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I hear you on Green Bay. I mean, they got all that athleticism and run all over the place and just a different level athletic-wise. And Keeper Sykes is incredible. But, I don't know, some shaky free throw shooting in the way that they kind of let that game become a game last night. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But these people aren't tuning in to hear us talk about the Green Bay Phoenix and Horizon League hoops. They want to hear some Packers talk and some Super Bowl talk, and we're going to keep these podcasts going until Bob says no mas. See what we did there? No mas. That was the signal given by one Julius Peppers.
And Roberto Duran many years before
that's
him.
Right. Yep. That's right. Okay, so we'll get into, obviously, the number one story here in Wisconsin and apparently Stark, Florida this week is LaTroy Guyon. The Green Bay Packers free agent nose tackle arrested with nearly a pound of marijuana, over $190,000, a handgun. There's a lot of layers to that one. We'll talk about that. Ron Wolf inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Bob's got a lot of expertise. He covered Wolf all the way through. Aaron Rodgers wins the MVP, his second MVP award. We'll get into Clay Matthews. He caught up with Tom Silverstein down at the Super Bowl, explained why he wasn't on the field for those critical drives late against Seattle. And then the bulk of this podcast, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. You and Tom were both there. You know what? Probably the best Super Bowl I've seen in my lifetime, just in terms of quality of the game, quality of the opponents, back and forth. Just an amazing game. They're going to be talking about that one for years. First things first, though, Bob. LaTroy Guyon, and, you know, maybe the season that he's had has been a little exaggerated. I mean, he was good, considering the circumstances, considering B.J. Raji went down with the torn tendon in his bicep, considering he looked just terrible in Seattle week one, stood up after he missed what? I think you had it in your grades, 19 of 21 training camp practices yeah. He missed. So considering the circumstances, for him to have 3.5 sacks and that be second on the team in tackles for loss and number one on the D-line and tackles per snap, a good season, but it's almost like he's kind of been made to be an all-pro at times, I feel like, right? I mean, we're just talking about football here first.
Yeah, he finished – I liked what he did, okay, by and large.
Mm-hmm.
He was maybe a little better than he was in Minnesota, but he was unanimous pick as the worst nose tackle in the division behind Linval Joseph, Fairley, and Stephen Paillet of the right. Bears. So, I mean, like you say, keep it under perspective. Showed a little pass rush at times. He was all right. And they wanted to bring him back.
Right.
With a modest new contract. Probably multi-year something or other, you know?
Right, right. Okay, so he's goes apparently home to Stark, Florida, and is pulled over by police for a failure to maintain a single lane. And once they smell the odor of marijuana, one thing leads to another. Anyways, this does not look good for LaTroy Guyon, Bob. They find, I'll get the exact figure here, 357 grams of marijuana, which comes out to be 0.78705 of a pound in two different bags. They find his 9mm semi-automatic handgun, which he said then, his agent also said, is registered, but when you pair that with the marijuana, that's a felony offense. And also, of course, the most puzzling part of this all really is the $190,000 in straight cash, and $190.28.81 to be exact. So, does not look good for Mr. Guyon. Boy, talk about bad timing. I mean, here you are. You have a chance to maybe get 3 years, 15 mil somewhere, and there's obviously more to this story. The agent recently told National Football Post that the money was going to be dispersed amongst family members in need down there. That could be the story. He didn't explain really the pound of marijuana. He said that the gun unloaded in a case. All right. Out of all this, Bob, I mean, what was your initial reaction? What do you make of this?
Just not a very smart move by Guyon. But he's been kind of described as that kind of a guy by people that worked with him and played with him in Minnesota. And, you know, I've been told that he carried large amounts of cash in Green Bay. He just had. I mean, it's just.
Is that right?
People live in different ways, yeah. And life has been kind of hard for LaTroy. He makes some crazy decisions at times. He's not always really with it. And I don't really dispute what that agent's saying, that he was going to go around Stark County to his uncles and wherever, other people, right. relatives, and give him a lot of $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. I could see that happening, the way he conducts himself in his life.
And you have that perspective, and also talking to him earlier this season for a feature story in the JS, I can kind of see that as well as in terms of the family aspect of it, where, like a lot of players, a lot of pros, I mean, grew up in a really bad upbringing. You know, when he's 1 year old, his biological father left. His stepfather was heavily involved in drugs, he said, on the street. And he was kind of the man of the household since he was 14. I have four younger siblings. He'd cook, he'd clean, he'd feed him ramen noodles. He kind of took care of him. He spanked his younger sister. You know, when he went to Florida State, his mom nearly lost her house. Nearly lost it entirely, had eviction notices put up on the door. And he didn't really want to get into that too much. It was kind of a sore spot, you could tell. Once he got that first contract with the Vikings, his mom handpicked the house, got her a home, turned things around to an extent, and, you know, here he is. He gets his playoff bonus and gets a contract and probably on the verge of another one. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what was going on. You know, it doesn't explain the pound of weed in his car. That's another story. Obviously, if you're putting two and two together on the outside, as a lot of people have, it does not look good, but there are different layers to this, aren't there?
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks like he could be a dealer of some sort, right? Obviously. We don't know anything about that. I don't know. I mean, he's subject to disciplinary action by the league. I mean, apart from the legal system, but from the league under the substance abuse policy, the violent crime policy, whatever that thing is. So the Packers obviously aren't going to be re-signing him anytime soon, and this is going to drag and drag now.
So is that the takeaway from a football sense? LaTroy Guyon will not be back with the Green Bay Packers. They also have B.J. Raj. He's a free agent nose tackle. We don't know that for sure, but...
No, I wouldn't say that, Tyler. I really wouldn't. I just don't know what to say, but I wouldn't say that it's probable that he wouldn't be back in Green Bay. I just wouldn't.
Let's not forget about Raji, too. I mean, here's a guy, that training camp, back at his more comfortable position on the nose. He had a pretty good camp. I mean, let's think back to that a little bit. How was he looking?
It was all right.
Before the injury?
It was pretty decent, yeah.
Coming back from a very serious injury, obviously, but he hung around with the team, stayed at the facility, rehabbed it. Seemed like he kind of took on a pretty admirable leadership role. I like how you worded in your grades. You never know with big guys what the market's going to be. It's really hard to tell what kind of market he's going to have in free agency. But if you're Green Bay, it's looking like that might be your best option now over the top.
I mean, I think they wanted to re-sign both of them. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't know what Kyrie Thornton, I mean, he could be gone the end of August, you know, if he doesn't show anything. He will be gone if he doesn't show anything more than he did this year. Mike Pennell's got a chance, but, I mean, they're thin. Luther Robinson's not a run guy, run-down player. I would think they'd take them both back. Now, this Guyon thing is, you know, leaves it all up in the air, but I still think he could be back.
Big picture, they still need help in that middle of the defense, don't they? I mean, when that NFC Championship game got away from them and Clay Matthews isn't on the field and they've had those problems at inside linebacker, Guyon, he's okay, solid much of the year, but they need to get stronger in the middle.
Yep, they do. Inside backer and in D-line, yep.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. We'll continue to cover it, see where that case goes, and it's obviously going to blend simultaneously with free agency in Green Bay. Might be moving on. We'll see. All right, let's transition. No smooth, seamless transition out of that topic to this one, but Ron Wolf. Let's talk about that before we get into the Super Bowl, into the Hall of Fame. Long overdue, would you say? With I mean, you've really got that perspective, Bob, from covering this team before 1992 and after 1992.
He basically saved the franchise, Tyler. I don't know. You could argue that. That's how low ebb this franchise was. Disinterest around the entire state, and Green Bay. They were the Pits, and they had been the Pits for 25 years.
How bad was it then? I mean, let's take me back into time, Bob.
Again? Yeah.
I know we do that a lot, but I mean, it's really interesting. And I mean, here when you look at it, seems like they add on something to Lambeau Field every year, and things just keep getting bigger and better and bigger and better, and the fan base is growing exponentially. But what was it really like before Ron Wolf became the general manager? Mid to late 80s. And anything you can add from what you already have on this podcast many times.
So, you know, there was a lot of legal things going on. I mean, the Mossy Cade trial, which followed the James Lofton trial. I mean, that was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back in a lot of people's mind. You know, sexual assault in each case. Lofton's acquitted. Cade's convicted. Those dramas being played out at Brown County Courthouse, downtown Green Bay. It was pretty amazing. Those are two within a year. And then that on top of all the losing and no quarterback and a structure that was murky at best, some kind of a 50-50 arrangement, a stadium that was, you know, falling in disrepair, small, kind of a corrugated steel fence around the boundary.
Corrugated? That's the worst kind of steel fence.
It was pretty utilitarian. They built it for $960,000 in 1957. It's amazing, wow. Isn't it? You go downtown, you go to Shopko or...
Love Shopko.
Ron Wolf pointed out Montgomery Ward downtown when they built the mall. And just stores. There was no Packer gear around. People weren't wearing... You go to the games, I mean, it wasn't all Packer clothing everywhere.
Is that right?
No.
Nobody...
Not at all.
And it's, I tell you what, that's probably the best example. My God, I mean, anytime you go to a bar in Green Bay, and I've been to a few of them here, Bob, you are almost guaranteed to see somebody in a Packer jersey, just out at the bar, you know, drinking a
in
Hinterland.
May or something. Or
May,
like,
May, April.
Nah, February.
I said this to Angela, my girlfriend. I mean, we were at the mall the other day, and I said, it blows my mind. Whenever we are out in Green Bay, you are guaranteed to see somebody in Packer gear. And today, I mean, it doesn't really sound that wild, that crazy, but you're saying before 92, that it was the exact opposite. Nobody really did that.
No. No, it really wasn't. So I played in a lot of rec leagues, you know, football, basketball, and softball at that point, fast pitch. And, you know, you'd get together in the bar afterwards, and guys really weren't talking Packers. Even though I was covering the team, they just weren't. That wasn't the topic of conversation. It just wasn't.
So what was?
I don't know. The Brewers, they were good in the early to mid-80s.
Politics.
No, I can't say that, but it wasn't all Packer talk like it is now everywhere you go. Seems like.
It really is, everywhere.
And let's go back to Ron. So it was awful. And I used to go to the Super Bowl all those years, Tyler. I had no idea what it took to, I came around the team in 79 or 80. I had no clue what it took to win. I had no idea what the standards were of excellence, what winning was about, what was required. The coaches I covered, the players. I mean, yeah, there's some good players on that roster, but nobody, they had totally lost track of what the glory years were all about and how it got there. I go to the Super Bowl and talk to these assistant coaches and scouts, players, and just all my stories were about how they got there and what Green Bay lacked and how Green Bay could get to this point. No clue. None of that. Lindy and Fonnie overmatched. Forrest Gregg. You know, they tried this, the Lombardi disciples, Bart Starr. I mean, just a poor coach, terrible general manager, mistakes, holdouts. You couldn't believe the number of holdouts. They weren't paying their players. It really was like a Siberia. I mean, players would use that term a lot in the locker room. The equipment situation, the guys would be begging for an extra pair of socks. I mean, they joke about it, you know. The Knoll brothers who ran the equipment shed, and, you know, I mean, God rest their souls, they were really good guys. But, you know, guys, they couldn't get an extra jock, extra towels. I mean, that's the way it was in Green Bay then.
You kind of need a jock once in a while.
So, all right, so they interviewed Ron Wolf in 87. Okay. Judge Robert Perrins, the former Brown County judge, was running the team. Talked to Wolf for 3.5 hours before they hired Tom Brotts. And Wolf basically just backed the heck out of it. He saw a situation that was unworkable. They just weren't going to give him total authority. And he saw a backward franchise that had no chance. So they hired Tom Brotts in a 50-50 relationship with Infani. Brotts probably would have done fine had he had been a legitimate GM like, you know, Thompson, Sherman, and Wolf. But his hands were tied, and Fonnie knew nothing about personnel. And they made many good draft picks. I mean, Chris Jackie, Leroy Butler, Tony Bennett, you know, Bryce Pop. We can go on and on. They made a lot of picks.
Tony Mandrich.
That was a concern.
Mm-hmm.
Had they not won that game in the finale at Arizona, they would have had Aikman instead of Mandrich. But Ronnie Pitts, the former broadcaster, returned a punt in that game and deep six their chances. So they got Mandrich over Barry Sanders. Everybody, I think, would have taken Mandrich over Barry Sanders.
Okay.
They took him over Deion Sanders, Broderick Thomas, a really good linebacker for the Bucs. So they were saddled with Mandrich, and that just became a symbol for the franchise's failings.
But it all led to, really, Ron Wolf's crowning achievement, seeing something in Brett Favre.
First of all, Bob Harlan had to see something in Wolf, mm-hmm. and he had to make that break with the past and go 100% to an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
An outsider, that was a big thing in kind of insulated Brown County, Wisconsin at that point. And they go to Wolf, and he goes down on the field in Atlanta when they played down there the first road trip. And he saw Favre during warmups. He just wanted to see that arm again. The next home game, they had, I don't know, 10,000 no-shows for the Detroit.
Wow.
No-shows were rampant, Tyler. They had 15,000 for a game in Milwaukee 2 weeks before. No interest. Wow. Disinterest, man. And so then we know, okay, so Wolf fired Infante the morning after the last game. Then he hires Holmgren, who never would have come here had it not been for Wolf's credibility. There's no way. Holmgren mm-hmm. leaving Bill Walsh and kind of, you know, football's Camelot out there on the Bay Area, he never would have come here. Again, to their credit, they hired two black coordinators, Ray Rhodes and Sherman Lewis. That had never happened in Green Bay. That was a big thing. I mean, this was considered not a real great place for African-American players.
Wow, is that right?
That was a big step, yep. And you've got to credit Holmgren on that one. A terrific coach. Outstanding. He brought that 49er system, and now I started to find out what it took to win, Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
From Wolf. And then the Brett Favre trade 3 weeks after the Holmgren thing, the Reggie White thing a year later, when Jimmy Sexton, the agent, said, you know, a year before this, there's a one team Reggie never would have considered. So Wolf did it by being aggressive, Tyler.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He was always tinkering, always. He made 87 trades in his 9 years. That's like 30 more than anybody else in the league. He answered every question. Now, I know the media was different then, but he returned virtually every call. He explained every move to me and others.
Well, he understood that, look, there was no interest before. You explain things to the fans, to the people who watch your team, and they understand more. I mean, people...
But he came from Al Davis and the School of Paranoia. That wasn't done in Oakland. Ron was not a product of that. He didn't see that. He did that. He took that upon himself.
Right.
He saw this market was totally different. And he reacted to it. And I think fans everywhere of this team loved him for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they just kept improving every year until they won the Super Bowl. They lost the second Super Bowl. Mike Holmgren had a tough week. He's thinking about other jobs, and team played down. They got upset by a good team. The spread was outrageous, but still. And then they lost a playoff game on... You know, they had a bad call that Will still talks about on the fumble by Jerry Rice
right.
in San Francisco, right? And then Wolf abruptly retired. He made a bad hire on Ray Rhodes. He corrected it within 1 year. He made a good hire on Mike Sherman as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with Mike Sherman. Guy could coach and practice. Good coach, man. And then he abruptly retired. He walked away, thought he was losing his edge, and that was it for him.
In that 7, 8, 9 year span, though, from what he had before, what it became, maybe unparalleled in the NFL, and that's why he's in the Hall of Fame now.
Pretty close, Tyler. I agree. Pretty darn close, yep. One more thing I was going to mention. Now I forgot. Keep going. I'll think about it. Getting me worked up on this 25 years ago stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how you remember everything. That's incredible. I mean, but you know what's interesting with Ron Wolf? All right, so free agency sets in.
Okay.
And I imagine at the time, one of the first talking points is, well, that's just going to bury the Green Bay Packers. I mean, there's no way they're going to be able to compete at free agency. If a player has that much freedom to go where he wants to go, various points of his career, how do the Packers compete? They get Reggie White in. They get several free agents throughout the decade to come in. For Ron Wolf to somehow pull that off, I mean, that's almost as great as him seeing something in Brett Favre.
It's probably greater. His force of personality, turn this pit around. Yeah, I was going to say, I just wrote down my note here when you were talking. Now I can't. There's so many things kind of going through my mind right now. Let's talk about
What was the reaction like around here when they did do that trade, when they did trade a first round pick for Brett Favre?
Well, Wolf sold it. He said he considered him to be, I believe, the number one pick in the draft in 91.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the best player in the draft. And I had known Ron Wolf for 10 years. He'd helped me on my draft series for all those years. He was with the Raiders. I mean, I knew how smart he was and how good he was on personnel. So, I mean, I was all for it. I knew about Favre from the previous year. You know, he had got that extra first-round pick in Tom Brotts' trade for, I can't remember where, was it maybe Tim Harris? But I'm not sure about okay. that. But, you know, Wolf gave Tom Brotts his due. I mean, he said without that number one pick, I might not have been able to make that trade. He had two ones that year. I guess I don't know.
Just to finish up here, is there a personnel move, something he did that isn't discussed? I mean, everything we kind of talked about with Ron Wolf here is really what a lot of people know. I mean, what's something that he did that helped turn things around that maybe kind of flies under the radar?
I just want to mention this, Kyle. Okay, I just thought of it. The fan hysteria around here now, okay? It's high. It's really high during these Packer seasons, you know? But trust me, it is nothing the way it was in 95, 96, those 2 years when they first won that Super Bowl, first reached the Super Bowl. It was pretty unreal. Nothing today can touch what it was like in the mid-90s, that resurgence. This state was just up for grabs.
Wow.
The love for this team and the love for what these players were doing, bringing back the echoes of the Lombardi years. It was just over the top adulation and all deservedly so. I mean, they had come back from Frank DeFord of SI, basically kind of wrote off the team as maybe there'll just never be a time again in Titletown, you know? He came in after those trials in like 88, 89. You couldn't argue with it. And when they finally won, anybody who lived it will remember that. And now it's just kind of, you know, there's a lot of bucket list fans from out and around the world, the country, who come in here and buy the scalp tickets and all mm-hmm. this kind of stuff. And it's the place to be seen. And, you know, the facilities are so beautiful now. The stadium is wonderful and it looks great. Well, the stadium wasn't wonderful back then. I mean, it was pure football, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
With the corrugated metal fence out front. They just finally added a few luxury boxes, we call them at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And, it was quite a situation.
Yeah, it was a comatose franchise, and he woke up, and he's the one who woke it up.
Yep, right.
Also down there in Phoenix, Aaron Rodgers wins the second MVP award. I guess it wasn't really a shocker with the regular season he had. The votes are in after the regular season. No interceptions at home. Beats the New England Patriots. He adjusts his game after the calf injury, returns on that calf injury, just pretty much lights the Chicago Bears on fire for two games. The first time after where there were a lot of paranoia with the fan base. Could you just put Aaron Rodgers' season into context? You know, we've obviously talked about that Seattle game a lot, but what kind of season did Aaron Rodgers have?
When you think about some of the things some of the opponents said after the games, you know, boy, their praise was unreal. Opposing players, opposing coaches, coordinators, press conferences before they came into Green Bay, you know, stuff like they had never seen a release like this. Stuff like the combination of the wheels and the arm and the brain. They had never really seen this package. It goes on and on. I mean, when I had to do my final grades, I there's a lot of good players on this team. And I don't believe in grade inflation. I thought this was after the playoffs, you know. The MVP, as you know, was voted on by that AP panel before the playoffs started. That's a regular season award only. And, you know, I mean, Aaron didn't play very well, as we know, out in Seattle. in the playoff. And I thought about it, and I gave him the A. Mm-hmm. I thought long and hard about it, and he was the only A, and there were several A-minuses. But second MVP, that's quite a deal.
And, boy, you really talk to some of these other quarterbacks and players around the league. I mean, the Kurt Warners, and who else was there? Lynn Dickey, I think, for that one story. But, yeah, what really stands out, here's a guy that he can make that play outside of the pocket. I mean, he can do what the Mannings and Brady's do in the pocket, but the fact that you said that complete package of doing it outside the pocket. You know, this year, I remember he was coming off the fractured collarbone, too. I mean, we've had a couple injuries with him since then, but didn't really know if that would affect his game. Boy, when he was at his peak, there was nobody better. Now, Tom Brady won the Super Bowl, and, wow, he did stuff to that Seattle defense. Rodgers could not, but second MVP for Rodgers, well-deserved. Gets it over J.J. Watt, who had, 13 votes himself? Is that right?
So, yeah, he was closer in the Pro Football Writers vote.
Yeah, well, MVP. Do you remember what that was?
I think it was 59% Aaron got on that one.
Okay.
And I don't know, Watt was about 35, and a couple others had votes.
top three vote getters, all with Wisconsin ties. What about that? Rodgers, Watt, Romo.
How about that?
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have reached about the midway point here, and I know you want to get into the Super Bowl, Bob.
Like to.
You've got your notepad there. You rewatched this morning. You got red eyes. You look like heck. You've just been watching the Super Bowl film all night, actually, haven't you?
It was really interesting. I spent about 2 hours with it this morning. Hadn't seen it since I was, you know, covered the game live and was looking at the TV monitor, but never had a chance to study it.
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting. Takeaway?
Give me a takeaway. Give me a hot take.
I can't believe Seattle lost this game.
Yeah.
I mean, I leaned over to Tom Silverstein, our beloved colleague.
Which, by the way, it was about 10 degrees up in Wisconsin while you were down in Phoenix.
Well, yeah.
Just want to throw that in there.
Kind of dank and gloomy down there, that old.
Oh, get out of here.
But it was all right. And, we're thinking what we're going to write. I mean, I'm going to write that game analysis, and Tom's going to write the one sidebar, and we're going to be on deadline. So at the beginning of the fourth quarter, I leaned over, and I think I said I'm going to write all Seattle and probably Russell Wilson, and then I think he was probably going to go off on Matthews, the wideout, and whatnot. But so I went back this morning, and it was kind of the way I felt it was at the time. I can't believe Seattle, and we won't go to the last sequence until the end. But prior to that, okay, Seattle has a slow start. They look terrible, but again, Russell Wilson's unfazed, Lynch is unfazed, everybody's unfazed. Okay. Now, we're going to get down to Lynch on the goal line, but just two plays I want to mention early. Okay, first series of the game, they got third and two on their own 24. They try Lynch on a zone read off the right side. Third and two, you think he should make it. Everybody thinks this is an automatic play, right? Well, it's not. Jamie Collins just knocked the living heck out of the center, Unger, shoved him back into the backfield, stuffed it. Lynch, no gain. Seahawks had to punt. All right, now let's go to the third quarter. They got third and one right away at the New England 8. Okay? They're going to try Lynch. They got four wides on the field against a seven-man box. They run a zone read. Ninkovich flattens from the backside. Seliga, 96, gets really good push against Unger, drives him back in the backfield. No gain for Lynch. Third and one at the 8. It's a goal line situation. Not jumbo against jumbo, but, you know, spread against spread. Kick the field goal. Had they converted there, they would have had a 7-point lead. All right, now New England. Okay, they throw the terrible interception by Brady. Personally, my MVP in this game, it's Mr. Butler. But we'll get into that later.
Really?
Yes. Not just for one play either.
I know. He had a good series there.
He had about three or four magnificent plays.
I don't know. It's Tom Brady.
No, it's not.
It's
Brady had two bad picks, Ty.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Seattle gets down, gets a touchdown. I mean, Russell Wilson on that scramble the way, you know, dodge 95 Chandler Jones. All right, Brady's not going anywhere. I mean, you got a whole Michael Bennett's playing out of his mind, holding penalty.
Well, he really was. Up until that late offsides, he was having a...
Third and nine, they throw that ball over there to Amendola. Like, he kind of short-arms the thing in front of, I think it was Hype, in front of Jamie Collins, I believe. Or no, Bobby Wagner. They punt. First play, Bevel, aggressive. Off play fake because he had established the running back Lynch. He goes 25 to Lockett. I mean, this thing is, you know, becoming a row. It's 24-14. Now they got third and two at the 47. And he throws that post corner route over there to Curse against our boy Butler, Malcolm Butler. People think it's a drop. It's great coverage. I mean, if you got a really good receiver with really strong hands, let's say Jordy Nelson comes to mind, he probably makes the play. But Butler's hand is between Curse's. He's on his one hand is on that forearm of Curse. That's at the 22. He catches that ball. It's going to be at least a 13-point lead. It's a great play by Butler to prevent a row. All right, now right at the end of the third, Brady, third and one. They're going to run Blount. He gets stuffed. Great penetration by McDaniel and O'Brien Schofield at the point of attack. Minus one for Blount. They punt. This baby's looking over.
Yeah.
Seattle is playing so well at this point. All right, they have a bad series. Now, you could blame Bevel for being too conservative. He runs Lynch twice for three, and then he gets sacked. Wilson had time. Not a very good play. They punt. All right, here comes Brady. Right off the bat, sacked by Bruce Irvin. Minus eight. Now it's third and 14. Great play by Brady. He steps up, hits Edelman. Man, what a game Edelman had, huh? Is he as good as Randall Cobb? He might be, Tyler. The guy was tremendous.
He was very, very good. And
no knock against Randall Cobb.
I'm sure Green Bay will be bringing the Edelman contract to the table of negotiations.
How much was it, Tyler? Do you remember?
17 mil. 4 years, maybe 5 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah, bargain.
Yeah.
Bargain.
Yeah.
He was incredible. I mean, that hit that he takes on that play, third and 14.
Yeah.
If he doesn't make that catch, the Patriots don't win this game.
Chancellor drills the heck out of him, right?
Yeah.
All right, so then it's a nice drive. It's a nice touchdown drive. So now it's 24-21. 7.5 left. Patriots or Seattle starts out on their own 20. Now this first down play, he throws that crosser to Lockett. Here he beats Malcolm Butler, and Malcolm Butler trips him up. That play's about 20 yards downfield. It's probably going to be a 30-yard gain. It should be a penalty. You got to get Malcolm Butler. He stumbled and he got beat on the route, but at least he had the presence of mind to do what he could and trip the guy up.
Can't remember the play at the top of my head.
I mean, this is one Seattle will never forget.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it's a 30-yard gain or a 15-yard penalty. All right, now third and five. They run the wheel route to Lynch, and the Packers know how good Lynch is on those wheel routes. For some crazy reason, Marshawn Lynch quits on that route. The ball from Wilson is well thrown. Tight to the sideline. It's about a 25-yard gain. He stops on the route inexplicably. Two plays on that. Bevel's being aggressive, which you want in a play caller. The incomplete to Lockett, which is a screw job, and the incomplete to Lynch because the running back. I mean, that's what Seattle's chance was really right there. All right, Brady,
right.
A really good drive. Seattle, their pass rush, they've had so many injuries this team. By this point, they don't have Cliff Averill. Sherman's, we don't have to go through all this, but we know all the surgeries these guys are having, Thomas and Sherman. They lost their nickelback, Jeremy Lane. They're without their tight end, their best deep threat. They're without their best run stuffer, Mebane. Their second best interior rusher, Jordan Hill. I mean, they're really playing up with fumes right now, you know? And their pass rush dies, as pass rushes do die. All credit to Josh McDaniel for devising this great game plan with the stuff on the flats, right? The Edelman, the use of motion, tremendous stuff. You didn't see Green Bay getting people open like that.
Boy, they knew what they were facing. They were facing this probably the best cover three defense, one of the best ever, and they just totally were isolating those one-on-one matchups with linebackers, with Vereen, They got Gronkowski on KJ Wright. Edelman had a big game. Just totally dictated the action.
Textbook. All right, so now Seattle's got 2 minutes left. They're down by four. Now they throw the a post corner to Lynch as a wideout. The guy makes a great move against Jamie Collins, 31 yards. Kind of surprised me here. 1:45 left. Bevel, again, he stays so aggressive. Great breakup by 21 Butler on that first down play to Kirsten.
That was a heck of a play.
Otherwise, the ball's at the 26, a 23-yard completion. Second down, they go deep again to Matthews, and a really good play by Browner. Stays patient, knocks the ball down. Third and 11, little hook over here to Lockett for 11. They're rolling. Now, okay, there's no way you can blame Malcolm Butler on this long bomb. You know, that's another thing people are saying. The guy had great coverage again. His hand's on the ball, and it's just pure luck.
Yeah. That's a great concentration. Give Curse a little credit here.
All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt.
It was Antonio Freeman all over again.
Now, if Butler, he shows amazing resourcefulness and alertness. Some rookie corners at this point, they think they've touched the ball, their job's done.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even look at the – had he not looked, Curse would have jumped up
right,
and scored.
Right, he would have jumped up and scored.
But he pushes him out of bounds.
Which, what did Chris Dishman do against Green Bay? I mean, kind of a similar play. Didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of lamenting the fact he didn't pick it up. And he tilted his head back and jogged away from the play. And
how old were you on that one, Tyler, in 2000?
13. I remember watching that.
I remember it all.
Yeah, it was an incredible game.
Good call.
Wasn't the reason they got into overtime, didn't it just start like raining like crazy on a chip shot field goal for Minnesota?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it was like the gods of Vince Lombardi and Curly Lambeau, and then they throw the interception on the botched field. Anyways, that play, I mean, that immediately brought back the Freeman play. So they get down there. They're right on the doorstep at the 6-yard line. Let's start there.
At the 5, first and goal on the 5. You got base against base. Seattle's in an I formation, base people against the 3-4 base people. I'm telling you what, I didn't realize this at the time. They run the stretch with the big fullback leading off left tackle. The fullback blows up Chung in the hole.
Yeah.
There's nobody there.
Dante Hightower.
And 54 gets off Okung, Hightower, and hammers Lynch at the knee at the 2.5. This is an easy touchdown for him. Oh, what a great play by Hightower.
I mean, that,
huh?
That play is as big as the Butler interception. I mean, really, that's a touchdown for Lynch if Hightower doesn't get off the block and make the tackle.
You saw it, huh?
Yeah.
I had no clue till this morning.
There's something else.
Let's play. All right. So now they're going to let
But they're at the 1-yard line.
Yep.
You know, here's where Bill Belichick plays a little game of chicken, right? I mean,
he did.
He could have tried to conserve time for Tom Brady, called a timeout here, but he almost kind of stares right through the soul of Pete Carroll, lets that clock drip down, lets it come down to one or two plays. It drips down. Second and goal from the 1. Seattle has a timeout. The world is expecting Marshawn Lynch, and Marshawn Lynch doesn't get the ball, Bob.
So he runs his goal line out there, Belichick does. During, you know, at 55 seconds, he runs his goal line defense, a 5-3-3. And Carroll and Bevel see this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going with a 3-wide thing. Did Belichick make a mistake not calling the timeout? He's been criticized for this.
Well, it was what Green Bay did against Denver in that Super Bowl we talked about earlier, right? I mean, they wanted to basically let Terrell Davis score and tried to give Brett Favre a little bit of time. I can't remember the timeout situation, but they wanted to give their quarterback time for a rebuttal. And then Belichick, he played it straight up.
It's the opposite.
Yeah.
So let's look at this. So we know what Bevel and Carroll, they say that they're going to throw against that goal line that they can't run. Now, they could have sent their jumbo people back out and run with the fullback and run with Lynch. Now, in this game, they had a 3rd and 2 and they ran Lynch for no gain early. They had a 3rd and 2 at the 3-yard line and Lynch scored a touchdown. That was against spread against spread. They had a third and one at the eight. Lynch went, got no gain. And they had a first and goal at the four earlier, and Lynch gained one. So in four tight situation runs, he had converted one out of four.
Well, first, backtrack a little bit. Didn't New England end up sending an extra DB out there?
They had three wides. Yeah, oh yeah, they changed personnel. They okay. did. They got the fullback out,
mm-hmm.
and they sent in a wide out.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
And
that wide out, Baldwin motioned left, and Revis went out to take him one-on-one.
Right, right.
Leaving the stack on the right. The ball's on the left hash, and the stack is over on the right. And it's not real tight. The stack is halfway between the numbers and the hash mark on the right. It's not a real congested situation.
All right, so let's cut to the chase. Are you saying this is a good call?
I'm saying it's not a bad call.
You're saying that this isn't a bad call. He was open. It appeared he was open. And Malcolm Butler makes an incredible play. I'll give you that.
Kearse has got to get his face across that darn defensive back. He goes in soft. He goes in weak. Hey, people are – Darryl Bevell's just telling the truth. The guy didn't play it strong. He played it like a –
I don't know. I mean, he almost looks surprised that Butler crashed in as hard as he did and was there. I didn't sense any laziness on Lockett's part. I mean, he is what he is. He's an undrafted receiver, you know, who's we'll get into the nitty-gritty of this, but you get two undrafted receivers running a route concept over there. You've got Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. You put the ball in Marshawn Lynch's
hands.
That's
the one you make the key point, Tyler. That's where I'd criticize them, because they have lousy receivers. Now, they've won with lousy receivers, but having lousy receivers do that, it's a little shaky.
Mm-hmm. And I know you brought back those previous plays, those previous run stops by New England, but I'm telling you, the game I keep thinking about, I mean, it's because I just wrote a story on it in the JS, but 4th-and-26 game where Amon Green is running all over the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah, he was stopped on 4th and goal from the one in the first half of that game. Mike Sherman gets in there at halftime, according to Niall Diggs, says, you know what, we get that chance again, we're running the ball, we're going for it. Just, I don't know, different games, different scenarios, but at the end of the day, Marshawn Lynch still had a 100-yard game. He's still Marshawn Lynch. He's still one of the best running backs in the game. You can't overthink this, right? You just cannot overthink this. I'm with you. You know, I don't have a big problem with the play, and it looked like he was open. And Russell Wilson, as you said, he thought it when the ball left his hand and said it was a touchdown. But you can't overthink it. You're at the one-yard line. You have a timeout. You have a timeout. If you don't get it, then maybe you get cute with something. But stick with the meat and potatoes, at least, with your best player.
Okay, one thing I'm thinking back on that Philly game. Philly had an injury on their front seven. They had injuries all year, an in-game injury. They had injuries all game long. That drive, it started on about the 10. That was a dying defense. I remember watching it during that timeout that Andy Reid took. Yeah, I think he did. Watching those people, their hands were on their thighs. I mean, they were just a dead defense, a lousy dead defense. You got to know your situation. New England, boy, that's really a good goal line front. And that's not a very good offensive line. That's not Green Bay's offensive line from 03. This is a shaky offensive line, really. Unger, we've seen it on two short yardage plays. What odds do you give Marshawn Lynch to score on second and goal from the one?
Better odds than I'd give Ricardo Lockett to catch a slant from Russell Wilson. It's such a tightly confined area. Even the route, I mean, if you're going to throw the ball, throw a fade. I mean, the ball, they just were in the NFC Championship game. They had how many tipped balls? I mean, the one to Morgan Burnett was tipped across the middle. Just, I don't know. I just think
how many times have you seen a player, like, made a pick in that situation? Do you know how phenomenal a play this was by Burnett?
It was. It was what? The one interception at the 1 yard line? There was some stat floating.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was. You're right. I don't want to take anything away from Malcolm Butler. That was. I mean, and what he saw, how he knew to react, it was bam. He was right there on the scene immediately. Incredible play, but great play. Just do it the next down if you're stopped. Do it on third down.
Based on these four plays earlier in that game, and I've seen Marshawn Lynch behind that line. I've seen him a lot just get stuffed, man. I'm going to say they're going to run that stretch with their jumbo people, against the goal line front. Let's say they send the fullback, trundle him out there. I'm going to give Lynch 60% chance to score that touchdown on second down, maybe 50. I think some of these other people who are saying it's a gimme, they don't even know football.
It's not a gimme, but the Seattle Seahawks have more rushing yards than any team in the NFL the last 3 years combined. Maybe it's four. I'm pretty sure it's three. That's what you do best. You run the football. I don't know. I tell you what, it's makes for high drama, and
you know,
we can talk about this one for a long time.
Kurse is at fault, too.
He is, yeah.
Browner made a heck of a jam on him, but still, and you could see Kurse with his left hand trying to get into Butler's body, but he didn't get enough shove off that line. He played it soft, and so did Lockett.
What would have happened if Bennett didn't get that offside penalty? I mean, they still had to run a play after that at their own half-yard line. What was it, one-yard line?
At the one.
The one. I mean, what? That would have been interesting, right?
It would have. Would have been tough to take a – you can't take a knee, no. Can you? No.
What were you thinking at that point?
I was just so overcome by Butler's pick. I was just trying to figure out what the heck happened.
So that was what – so, I mean, in your game story, I mean, and obviously Butler was – he was incredible. I mean, you could make the case for him for Super Bowl MVP. Is that really what stood out to you immediately was the actual play more than the call?
I mean, completely. I mean – you know, I'm on deadline. I'm trying to figure out what happened first. Kind of,
right,
you know?
Right.
I never even really thought about the call. Yeah. I just couldn't believe that this kid had done that. I'd never seen it.
Out of West Alabama, right?
To jump a pick like that? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But when you got... All right. So Bevel, you know, he's never going to get a head job. He should be fired. All this stuff from... And people read all this stuff everywhere and the pundits... It's just ridiculous. Bevel's really an outstanding play caller. I've thought that for 3 or 4 years now. He's unpredictable. He's aggressive. Tom Cable helps him a lot in the run game, but Bevel knows the run game too. I think the guy's an outstanding coach. Now, whether he can lead a team, I have no idea. You know, that's up to some owner and committee to decide that. But to call a game on offense, man, I'd go with Darrell Bevel almost everybody in the league.
I mean, the resourcefulness with the tools that he has. I mean, really. I know Doug Baldwin hates when they get criticized, but this isn't exactly second round and first round picks, highly paid guys. I mean, you only have to look to really at the end of the NFC Championship game and the plays that they called and the things that they designed. Creativity was there. Plus, I don't know. I mean, maybe Pete Carroll is just falling on the sword, but he said he told him to throw the ball.
Oh, yeah, and there was enough time because there was no rush getting that second down call in. I think Carroll was right on the headset, obviously, and go with it, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he approved it, certainly. You're right, Tyler. God, getting all this out of Matthews in the Super Bowl, are you kidding me? He could have been the MVP at one point.
Yeah, I mean, he was working at Reebok, right?
No catches. I mean, they lost the starting tight end. They lost their best deep threat. The O-line, they should have re-signed Giacomini. I mean, he's using Marshawn Lynch as one of his key receivers. We saw it against Barrington, repeating a wheel route, doing this stuff again. All right, so anything else about this game, Tyler? It was a classic. It's in the book, you know, I had the undefeated Patriots defeat as number one. This is going to be number one, I think, right now.
Is it?
If I had to do it, I think so.
I was just going to ask you that. I mean, where does this rank?
Yeah, I think it's...
And you know what? You know what's incredible is just the fact that you have the quality of opponents. I mean, there's a lot of games where you might have a 9 or 10 win team. I mean, Green Bay was a really good 10 win team when they won it, but you know, like Arizona, Pittsburgh, great game, but still was a 9 win Cardinals team that won a weak division that year. You had two opponents, Seattle, New England, that were just loaded. I mean, two incredible teams, maybe the best defense of this era against maybe the best quarterback of all time. Going toe to toe, I'm with you. I think it's the best ever. Although also, yeah. I've only been watching the Super Bowl since the early 90s myself. All right, well, hey, let's take some questions from readers here. And yes, we know we talked about the Super Bowl a ton this podcast, but we are going to come back and break down Green Bay's roster, the offense, the defense. We still have a lot of that to come. So let's dive into a few of these. Paul Komorowski. At Komikaze, he asks, please rank Randall Cobb, Tremont Williams, and Brian Bulaga in order of re-signing importance. and who might replace each one if they walk? That's a loaded question there, Bob.
You start, Ty. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think you can look at this a lot of different ways. Obviously, the first two names that come to mind are Cobb and Bulaga. Who's more important? Well, look, when Brian Bulaga's gone down, when they've had an offensive tackle go down, man, it gets bad fast. The thing is, he's probably going to command a pretty big deal. As you wrote earlier this year, there's not a lot of offensive tackles, solid, strong offensive tackles on the market. He'll get a lot of money. But I don't know if it's an absolute slam dunk that it's Randall Cobb number one. That's Randall Cobb had a heck of a year. But he also, you know, plays a position inside receiver, the slot. Edelman didn't get a lot of money. Aaron Rodgers has adjusted to several different receivers. He's incredibly important to this offense. I'm not saying he's not, but I just don't know if it's as of a wide gap between those two as maybe it seems.
Those are the top two over Tremont. We agree with that, right?
Yeah, but, gosh, you know, Tremont's an interesting guy.
He is that.
32, and he's playing. I mean, these last two seasons were two of his best seasons after, you know, fighting the nerve damage in his shoulder the previous two. That's going to be interesting as well. I mean, Devon House has battled injuries. Casey Hayward hasn't played outside along the perimeter. You know, you're developing Dimitri Goodson. Micah High's an inside guy. Tremont Williams still means a lot to the secondary.
Yep, good player.
All right, well, we didn't really answer your question, but we'll be getting into free agency a lot here. All right. Youper. You always like a good Youper, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
At Youper underscore IA asks, will the Packers look for a mobile tight end like Max Williams out of Minnesota to upgrade over Andrew Corliss? And they obviously drafted Richard Rodgers in the third round last year. Now,
well, Youper, they have Brandon Bostic.
They do have Brandon Bostic on the roster.
Will he still be there much longer?
I'm not sure if I'm ready to pontificate on that quite yet, Bob. Yeah. But it's going to be difficult. You know, he's developed 3 years in Green Bay. This would be his fourth year coming up. Yeah. We all saw what happened. But, yeah, I mean, with Corliss and Richard Rodgers, I mean, Richard Rodgers, out of all the rookie tight ends, he was probably the most productive. Not a lot of blazing speed, but maybe some of the best hands on the team. As a blocker, still kind of a work in progress. Needs some work there, but they could still use a playmaker there, couldn't they? Oh, Andrew Corliss did some good things. He made some big catches for this team, but that might still be a position that they look at. Man, did you get a chance to watch much of Max Williams?
No, not yet. Looks good, huh?
Highlight reel. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I mean, that's all I've seen of him, the highlight reel. Okay, let's... Hey, Noah Kozlov, our buddy Noah.
All right.
Great question. Is he making you shovel, and what's for brunch?
No snow, Noah.
No snow.
You probably got more out in that Gotham of yours than we got here.
And to answer your question, no, Bob did not make me brunch here, unfortunately.
A little coffee.
We'll work on that coffee. Got my coffee.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes, good coffee. Okay. Thomas Vandershaft, we kind of answered this question just now, but he asked, should Tremont get a new deal? If not, is Devon House ready to take over? Just what do you think about Devon House's opportunities this year? When he did play, Bob, you know, he did a pretty good job on Calvin Johnson, good job on Julio Jones. His best play of the season, though, is when he hurts his scapula, too. So he's a tough player to read, isn't he?
Yes, he is. I think he's going to get big money, Thomas, and I think he's going to go quick.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Elsewhere?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I just think people can look at the size and the height, and he's a good guy, and just snap him up.
There you go. Oh, here we go. David Kaiser. He asks, what's more likely next year? 13-3 or 8-8? Will the loss in Seattle motivate or halt the Packers? Now, this is one of the questions I asked of those guys in that 4th-and-26 story, because Green Bay, after that game, they started 1-4. The next year.
That was interesting.
Yeah, and they did finish 10-6, and that's the playoff game where Randy Moss was mooning fans, or half-fake mooning fans. Anyways, they got it together a little bit to win the division, but they did start 1-4. Now, Larry Bechtold, the O-line coach, Craig Knoll, the backup quarterback, they did feel like there was a hangover there and that it did affect the team. Niall Diggs, who that loss, it still bothers him to this day. He was a really interesting guy to talk to. We talked for an hour. I wish I could have had the chance to cover
him. Good story.
him and Amon Green, they didn't think that there was a hangover. They thought that they got past it and that this offseason is long enough that you can kind of move on. We're going to find out with this team very quickly. Now, they will get a chance at Seattle, but as Dig said, you know, they might even beat Seattle. They might pummel them, but you don't forget a game like that.
Well, I don't think David wants to hear from me after my Seattle 33-13 prediction. I'm never going to. I do it once a year on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And blow it. And people wonder why I don't put a score on the Packer game. That's why. Who cares?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of reads into those predictions a little too much. They're fun, I guess, to do, but I had the New Orleans Saints in the Super Bowl, Bob. The Saints. Lucy, you had Seattle in there, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think I've hit one of those in about 15 years.
Is that right?
Super Bowl winner, I doubt it. Now, I don't know.
Well, these are the fools. They're still listening to our podcast an hour into it here, and we don't even know who's going to be winning the games. Last one, Sean Upton. Yes. Can you think of, or in parentheses, fabricate, one reason to be excited about Kyrie Thornton for next year?
Yes, it's year two, Sean. And year two, players can jump.
I'm not giving up on him.
Kyrie
Thornton. There's one half-line drill still in my head where he just ragdolled Don Barkley to the ground. Did not continue to go that way for Kyrie Thornton, but... Hey, we'll see. He's going to have another shot. All right.
So we're going to go to the Bellamy boys again?
I think so. I think we got to go back to the redneck girl,
yep.
Correct?
Yep.
All right.
1982.
Thanks a lot
Thank
for
you.
Listening, everyone. Her hands are callous.